When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, friends, and welcome back to another episode of Tigress. As you know, the longer I'm in the DCP studios, the more comfortable I get. And I feel like I just progressively like sink deeper into the chair and, you know, feet up, very cozy. Anyways, we are back for another episode with Jeannie, who you heard from last week as well. She is an incredible model, activist, organizer, Korean-American badass.
Badass Asian.
Yeah, we decided, or I decided without asking you, that the episode was going to be called Bad Asian question mark, badass Asian, period. Which I felt very clever for. Yes. So
the title of our life story coming out soon.
As two badass Asians, we're here to talk to you again about this nervousness of like opening up about trauma, family trauma, mental health as influencers with platforms. Yes. One, because it's scary, like for anybody of any identity, yeah. Opening up about vulnerability, especially when it's still a current vulnerability, is scary. But also because I think it is very related to an Asian fear of this, like, dishonoring yourself, your yeah. family, your community, and that dishonorableness being something that will ruin your reputation.
Yeah.
Which I definitely feel like I grew up with that, especially around appearances with my Japanese grandmother, my obachan, who, by the way, was called obachan because she thought obasan, which is really what it is, grandma in Japanese, was too old. Like, she was very into this idea of, like, wanting to be the young
yeah.
put together, makeup, stilettos, you know, woman. So I feel like there was this kind of obsession with appearances. And then, of course, my Chinese grandparents disowned me because I am so open yeah. about trauma on social media and periods and whatever. So, I mean, when you and I talked last week, you and I were kind of talking about, like, how do we talk more about mental health, talk more about substances, substance abuse? How do we talk more? I think about a lot about, like, how do I talk more about sex?
Yeah.
Because that's such a huge part of my trauma and, like, yeah. also what I'm enjoying at yeah. the moment with, in a way, because there is still so much that I do keep private. But things that I want to talk about publicly, but the nervousness around talking about it.
Yeah.
What comes up for you there?
I think about, like, how I feel like I'm currently on this newfound journey of trying, because I actually always considered myself, I thought I was a really, like, vulnerable, open person, but I think there's a difference from opening up about my trauma and then opening up about it in a way that I'm actively working to dismantle the stigma that surrounds it. And so for me, like, I just, with everything you just said, like, the first thing I thought about, you know, sex, mental illness, drugs, these are all such stigmatized realms and topics within the Asian community. Like, I'm 23 years old. I still am waiting for the sex talk, for the birds and bees talk. I'm still waiting for it, you know, and I don't think it's ever coming.
Yeah.
And with mental illness as well, you know, I guess I always thought, like, I couldn't share about my journeys, my journey and my experiences and my struggles until I felt like I was out of them. And then we were talking about this today, like, how am I really ever going to get out of it if I don't learn to do away and dismantle the stigma surrounding
yeah.
it? Because I also think the way, for me, I think about the dialogue that I hold with myself around, like, the trauma of going through drug addiction, of yeah. going through the treatment system in this country, of going through the troubled teen industry from a really young age for so many years throughout my adolescence. And I think about, in that relation, the way I talk to myself when I'm thinking about those things. And I really realized like how self-deprecating the dialogue I was and the relationship I was holding with myself, and shame. It was so, these experiences for me are so steeped in shame. And it's not my own shame. It's like what you say, it's cultural, socially conditioned and taught shame, like this idea of Asian shame, that we are dishonoring our families, our reputations. It was, for me, like the most important thing in my family was always saving face. No matter how crazy the shit that was going down in our house was, you always showed up to church. You had a smile on your face. And I think that's trauma in and of itself.
Yeah.
The repression, the silencing. But yeah, I feel like, I don't know, like I want to like almost like bounce this question back to you, because I've also been interested in like, what's the line between being open? Because I also think I've realized in doing this trauma work and like healing the last year, I've really realized that like I always had a tendency to overshare.
Yeah.
And I understood for the first time where it came from and how it was actually one of the survival mechanisms I learned. Because I never felt like I could share and speak about and be open about it. So then it was this very like all or nothing like mindset, yeah. once one end of the spectrum to another. So it's like I'm trying to like almost like find the middle of that. And yeah. I feel like you, like I really look up to you in that way, because I feel like you have created a space and a platform where you're able to be so open, and you're doing it in a way that also feels safe to you.
Well, one, I appreciate that, but also I think like my whole platform is based off of what other people would consider oversharing. You know, yeah. like I have Tigress, a podcast where I'm literally talking about my trauma and my constipation, and like period. My as whole TikTok is built off of like showing my period blood. So I think that for me though, I was, when we were texting earlier today about like this idea of like saving face and like the nervousness around it, I was thinking about it a lot, because me being super open about my trauma has been, one, sometimes detrimental to myself. And it's been hard on my family too, right? Yeah. Like I have gone through some like cancel culture before, and a lot of what I shared, the vulnerabilities, were like eventually weaponized against me. And yeah. also I think one of the things that I have hurt my family with in some ways is like, I came out as a survivor of child sex abuse before my sisters had platforms and before they wanted to.
Yeah.
And I think that's something that I like definitely would have done much differently, is like, I think that in many ways, like I'm an external processor, and I'm honestly much better in front of crowds of lots of people than like one-on-one. I get more nervous one-on-one. And because of that, I've always felt really open sharing. And I kind of just said fuck you to this idea of oversharing, because I was like, oversharing is all relative. If someone's really conservative with what they want to be open with, then like, of course they're going to think I'm yeah. oversharing. But if I'm sharing because I want to be sharing, am I sharing for the right reasons? Am I sharing because I want to make money? Then that's probably not the best yeah. idea. If I'm sharing because I genuinely am trying to find community and it's like healing for me, then that is a good idea. Like for me, I have always been really open about being a survivor. Mostly because I've been so lonely in that journey. And by being open about being a survivor, I found such a strong community of other survivors. That's been so integral to my healing. Being open about being ashamed of being Asian growing up, now I have a community online and in person of people who feel the same way.
Yeah.
You know? So some of it is like more selfishly driven. But there
are I didn't think it's selfish though. And I think that's really the way it needs to be, yeah. is like, what do we, because at the end of the day, we're speaking from our own experiences. Yeah. That's why both me and you have ended up like in this activism, yeah. you could call it, space. But I think for me, it's like I'm constantly battling this question of like, what do I need to say to feel more free standing in my truth? Not like, what do I need to say to make other people understand me better?
Yeah.
You know, get my message better, feel more comfortable in my presence. Because the minute I start worrying about that stuff, it never ends.
Well, I feel like what I always tell people is like, you do not owe anybody your story, right? Like you don't, the goal is not to be someone who gets on a podcast and has a whole podcast about their trauma. Like that is not everybody's goal. But I feel like for you, like you're an organizer about generational trauma, racial trauma, like injustice.
Yeah.
And you do have a platform and you clearly have, you know, this desire to share stories too, right? Yeah. And you are a storyteller. So like I completely empathize with like the desire to share more and the desire to tell stories. I'm curious, like what do you think are like the main things holding you back? Is it like you feel unqualified to talk about these things, or is it also a nervousness of taking up space and not being ready for it? Like what is it that kind of holds you back now?
Like both, for sure. All of it. I mean, I think it's definitely, it's so much easier for me to stand up for other people than it is for me to stand up for myself. So it's this constant, you know, voice in the back of my head telling me to like stop talking and be quiet and shut up. Because it's this constant inner dialogue of like gaslighting myself. Like, does my story even matter? You know, really for me, I think it boils back down to how much I had to separate myself from my trauma in order to continue being accepted by my family.
Yeah.
You know, I went to rehab when I have a very muddled history with drug addiction. Mm. I have been clean for 6 years now from opioids, which was my drug of choice. I spent 3 years in and out of treatment programs during my adolescence, throughout which my family pretty much disowned me and wanted nothing to do with me. Because I grew up in a very traditionally Asian household where you were told, if you do drugs, you will go to hell. You're possessed by the devil. And that shame that was steeped in me, you know, it wasn't my shame. It was never my burden to carry, but it was so deeply steeped in me from a really young age that, I felt really fucking alone.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like this, and it was, I think that shame for me that did more damage. As I'm like really starting to go into this trauma, it's the shame that I held around it that, and the stigma and the silence that made me feel so much more alone than the actual struggle. And I think that is, you know, it's actually like a scientifically proven thing that I was even reading this article about abortions and about what this kind of means for mental health and women getting abortions right now with the overturn of Roe v. Wade, and specifically pertaining to Asian women. You know, 30, I think it was around 30% of Asian women who get pregnant have abortions on average, and yet we go through it completely alone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's such, abortion is a very stigmatized thing in Asian communities. And it's actually the stigma of having an abortion is more detrimental to her or their well-being than the actual abortion, to their emotional well-being at the end of the day. And I think it's the same thing with the way we carry our traumas. So I'm just trying to learn how to be more kind and open with myself and kind with myself on my mental health journey. You know, it's one that I feel like I've struggled so and felt so isolated in, because also like mental health is not really a thing. Like it's just not a word in my parents' vocabulary. Yeah.
Geico asks, how would you love a chance to save money on your insurance? Of course you would. After all, who wouldn't love a great deal, right? And when it comes to great rates on insurance for all of the things in your life, Geico can help. Like with insurance for your car, truck, motorcycle, boat, and RV. Even help with homeowners, condo, or renters coverage. You could save even more with a special discount when you bundle your coverages. Plus, add the easy-to-use Geico mobile app, available 24-hour roadside assistance, and more. And choosing to switch to Geico becomes an easy choice. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote or contact your local agent and get started seeing how much you could save.
This show is part of the Pro Democracy Podcast Coalition. I think most of us agree that in a functioning democracy, the winner should be determined by the voters. Well, that almost didn't happen in 2020. Now, extremists are working to intimidate and replace nonpartisan election workers with quote-unquote yes men who might reject election results. The only thing that will stop them is us. We've partnered with the grassroots pro-democracy organization, Represent Us, to give you the tools you need to protect free and fair elections. Learn more and get involved. Visit represent.us/pod to learn more.
Has it become part of their vocabulary?
Yeah, but no. Like, I feel like we've done enough therapy sessions where they've been told, you know, that these depression is real, that these are the ways that you should care for and adjust your behavior with someone who has depression. But it feels more mechanical than it does genuine. And that is something that I've struggled to accept for a really long time, that my family, like my parents, don't understand something that, like, probably the most integral part of me is my mental illness. It has been the most, like, defining thing for me since I was 13 years old, when I, you know, first started cutting myself, and I ended up in the psych ward. And I'll never forget when my parents picked me up from the psych ward. They just dropped me off at school the next Monday. And that was the next, right after, like, it was just another Monday. So these are really experiences that I have had to process completely by myself, and also experiences that my family saw me as less than for, as weaker for, a bad Asian per se.
Yeah.
To admit that I'm weak. I think emotions have always felt like a sign of weakness in my household. I think more so now, like, I am really open with my parents, and we are coming out of like 10 years of being on this journey also together. And not just investigating my mental health, but also my parents, is something I've really, really tried to do, because I think we can only understand other people's struggles to the capacity we understand our own.
No, I totally hear you on that. And I think that, honestly, cutting was the hardest thing to explain to my grandparents. Because they had read about it on social media. That's one thing, which is, I think I've kind of come at it from the opposite journey, which is like, in the sense that, like, you experience it with your family, you haven't shared it on social. I shared a lot of things on social before I ever told friends or family. Like, my mom, I think the first time I said, like, I was in an abusive relationship was honestly, like, in my TEDx talk. And my mom was in the audience, right? There have been things, like, the first time I talked about, like, the first time I talked about, you know, more of, like, my severe depression was, like, kind of figuring it out on speaking tour, right? Where I was processing a lot of it. And there's a lot of danger to that, right? Like, talking about things before you're ready.
I mean, that's what I feel like this is. In the sense that, like, I mean, I don't really, I feel like if I waited to come to this room until I was ready, I would have never been here. I don't really think that, because honestly, I've been waiting for like over a year, being like, I'm on my healing journey and I'm waiting to get to the end point to like,
yeah,
start speaking out against these things, not for other people, but because I was like, if I hold this in shame and silence for one more day, I'm literally it's going to eat me alive.
Yeah. Well, and I'll say, I think that that's one of the things that I hate about like the mental health advocacy space. And sometimes is like so much of the platforms and even the figures present it as, I was sad and now I'm all better. And like, here's what I did to make sure I'm not sad. And I'm like, if you have depression, you're always going to be depressed. If you have these different, like I have BPD, like I will always have some sort of BPD tendencies, traits. And I think that it is such a, like these urges to hurt yourself, or even like, you know, urges to go back to addicting habits or substances never really go away. Yeah. They're manageable. Do you feel like part of maybe why you don't want to share it deeply is there some sort of like protecting your parents? Because obviously they probably care a lot about their public image or reputation, even if they're not on social media.
No, 1,000%.
Yeah.
Even like right now, I'm working on a project where I feel like I can't really say the story because I'm going to say too many things that are going to embarrass my mom. Mm. And that is something that I have been trying to work through on my own more, because I can't silence my own struggles to make her comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And her shame isn't my shame, and it shouldn't be my shame.
Yeah.
And so I think it really is what we feel like we have to get off of our chest. I mean, even right now, like I feel like the whole time we've been having this conversation, in my head I've been choosing the things I'm saying so
like you're filtering
carefully,
it.
And I'm filtering everything I'm saying. Like, I'm going to be totally transparent about that.
No, absolutely.
But I think that's just, I find myself also doing that, honestly, like in therapy, like one-on-one, like, and it took me years of being in those rooms to, I think, get to a point where I can truly be unfiltered and authentically shed light on what's going on inside of me.
Well, and I think that a part of it, similarly to how you don't need to wait to be totally healed before you share your story, it's like the goal isn't to be completely unfiltered to the point that you get hurt, right? Like, there are some things where even having the right language is important, so you also don't hurt other people. Like, I recognize for me to, like, I regret doing a lot of speaking gigs where I was held up as like, this is what a girl boss looks like who can manage school and work. Like, meanwhile, I was not sleeping and not eating and like not healthy, right? Yeah. Like, I think that there's harm done when you do take the mic and you're not, maybe you don't have the wisdom there.
Yeah.
And like, maybe I'll look back on this podcast and be like, whoa, girl, what were you doing? And it is true that like things change, right? Like, even I'm almost at the 50th episode of Tigress, and like, there are definitely opinions of mine that have shifted, and I think that's okay.
Yeah.
And I think it's also like figuring out like what kind of filter you have, right? Like, there are so many things that I want to be really open about. Like, I've been really open about my interest in polyamory, like really interested. Like, I've talked openly. And of course, like, my boyfriend hates that because we're in a monogamous relationship. Yeah. But like, it's been something I've been super curious about. And I've personally made the decision that I need to explore this publicly.
Yeah.
Because that's how I've connected with so many other people who have the same questions. But there are things that, like, out of respect for him and myself, like, I don't talk in detail about our sex life. Yeah. Right. And I think that it's just figuring out like what filters you want to have. And even with my mom, like, you know, there are a lot of things my mom would prefer I don't talk about that I've had to be like, no, mom, like,
this is a part of me.
It's a part of me. And just as much as it is your story, like, it is my story.
Yeah.
And there is, I think, a part of that, like, becoming independent and like establishing your own boundaries
too, yeah,
you know,
and speaking your truth and not what you think like your parents want to hear. And just getting independence from our parents, I think, is such a multidimensional journey. Yeah. Because it's not only like, oh yeah, we're 18, we moved out of the house, I'm financially independent. It's becoming, for me, it's like emotionally becoming independent has been so hard for them because I didn't realize, I guess, the deepness of like the conditioning.
Yeah. Most Asian immigrant mothers, women especially, most do.
Asian immigrant women have severe mental health struggles.
Severe generational trauma
that no one talks about. They're like, everyone thinks they're the most pleasant women. They stay so quiet. They're all like literally seen as the most pleasant, you know, quiet women. The shit, the rocks, the weight of that these women are carrying, it's so deep. And it, for me, like when I think about, like I think to be here, to be able to have a perspective where I've been endowed with learning about what's happening in my brain and able to make sense of it, sitting in therapy, like as also fucked up as I feel like these spaces were, they also like, it is a privilege for me to be able to grow up in a society where mental health is talked about.
Yeah.
And it is actively, we're trying to destigmatize it. And, but I think we need to go a step deeper because kind of the intersections of Asian American identity and mental illness are so deep.
Yeah.
And are so silenced. I think about like suicide. I think about my struggles with suicide. I think about how shameful I felt for those moments. And I think about the ways that people who commit suicide are literally dishonored.
Mm-hmm. And the family,
their death. Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of shame in the family.
Which is, goes back to like, it's a religious thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, I think about how South Korea, on a global level, has one of the highest suicide rates out of any country in the fucking world. We're one of the tiniest countries in the world, yet we have one of the highest suicide rate. No one talks about that. Like you see these K-pop stars, everything. Like K-pop is so hot right now. Like if you actually follow Korean media, the amount of K-pop stars that have committed suicide in just the last decade is staggering.
Yeah.
You know, and these aren't things that we openly include in the American knowledge of what it means to be Asian.
Yeah.
I think also like what it means to be Asian to America is to like part of shutting up and listening and being the model minority is never validating your own shit.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's definitely a lot of like tracing my steps back.
Yeah.
Because I
like
think
journaling.
And I think about kind of like the imagination I had when I was young, kind of before all of this shit happened, before all the trauma decided to just come in. And that is what I chase after in my healing journey. But yeah, I mean, healing's not linear. And like, I fucking like hate the way healing is depicted on social media for this reason, because it's not as pretty as like the Instagram quotes make it look.
Yeah.
Like it is not pastel hearts and stars, guys.
It's
and
not
gradient background.
Taking, for some people it might be. For me, it's not taking baths and looking at sunsets.
it's so unlinear. And I think that it's this like, it is that pressure of like, in, I think that's such a social media, like social media is just it's a kind of incubator of perfection.
Yeah.
And so we're only allowed to bring our best selves to the table, like our most manipulated, perfected selves. And it's just, I've completely actually disengaged from my social media for the last like few months and really tried to reevaluate and reestablish my relationship with it.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to admit how much power it was taking over me and how detrimental it was affecting, how detrimentally it was affecting my mental health in terms of the expectations I would hold around like my healing.
Yeah. And I mean, that's a whole other side of this when you start thinking about what are you going to share publicly? Because when you share it publicly, anybody can have an opinion.
Yeah.
And I mean, the amount of hate
I'm sure you've gotten.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's every day. And unfortunately, the more viral, quote unquote, successful piece of content is,
You face backlash.
And these algorithms feed off of controversy, right? Yeah. The more controversial something is, the more people will engage, the more people will be following. So I think that, I mean, I could not share publicly in the way that I am now and be stable if I didn't have like my weekly therapy, which again is like such a privilege to be able to even have therapy. And yeah. I think it's not a light decision to make, but at the same time, it sounds like, I mean, you potentially have a podcast coming out. Yes. And you are sharing so much with multimedia and, you know, press and social. Yes. So it's an incredibly powerful tool.
Yeah. No. And I've been writing a lot of the things that I hope to talk about in my podcast coming out soon.
Yes.
It's called Confessionals of That Asian Girl. and really it's a space where I hope that me and other Asian femmes and women can really confess all the things that we've been so ashamed to speak out about, and include from ranging from things like, you know, sex, drugs, mental health, like all the things we've touched on today, because the more I talk about it, the more I'm like, this is a never-ending conversation. Yeah. And it really is also a tool to aid in my own healing. The more I share, like, you know, I was nervous to do this, to talk about these things, but the more I'm open about the parts of me that I hold in such shame, the less they hold power over me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so for me, it's not about like, you know, when you come on this podcast and you're sharing your experiences, that's for you.
Yeah.
That's for your healing. And it's also in hopes that someone else who feels alone in a journey that's similar to yours can hear that and can not feel so alone anymore. And I wish I had, you know, podcasts like yours, like when I was growing up, to kind of warn me of the dynamics that the world sets forth for Asian women.
I mean, also like a symptom of shame is silence. And so like if the opposite of shame or if the opposite of silence is speaking, then the opposite of that could be the opposite of shame. So, I mean, it makes absolute sense.
I mean, that's how I kind of, I feel like that's just how I like organically ended up here.
Yeah.
Was like, I literally like was so full of rage. I found myself needing to scream on the front lines.
Okay. So when I was in high school, I ran an Asian affinity group called Asian Pride Club.
Love.
And
I wish I had an Asian Pride Club at my high school.
It's actually really funny because the school tried to block it and their reaction was, you can't have an Asian Pride Club because we couldn't have a white Pride Club. So it's discriminatory. Yeah. They actually said that. And like a lot of teachers, like middle school teachers included, like rallied so that we could have an AP club. I was really excited about Asian Pride Club because. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Because AP Club was like, I thought it was like a funny play. Yeah. So while you were talking and you were talking about your podcast name, I was thinking Confessions of That Asian Girl is TAG. And in the school system, TAG is talented and gifted.
Oh my God.
So when people say like, are you going to TAG? Are you doing TAG? Which is the talented and gifted track. And it's a joke because it's like all the Asian kids are in TAG.
That's so good.
So I was just thinking about that while you're talking. I was like, the acronym of like AP Club and TAG.
Divine. That's meant to be. I'm just kidding.
I love. Tag. I wonder if you can find like the their like logo or something. Because like
yeah,
there are
we
so,
should do a spin on that.
I did all those fucking workbooks and extra tests yeah. that were like the tag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, my mom was like, why are you not tag? Yeah. Tag, tag, tag.
I also was not tag in fourth grade. And
I
then,
think I made it for like one yeah. year and then I got kicked out.
I was always such a horrible test taker. And then my mom, even though she says she's not a tiger mom, does have some of that in her. She went to the school and convinced them that I'm just a bad test taker and I'm actually very much a talented and gifted student. And so I needed to be in tag. So I got in because my mom every single year went in to convince them.
I love that.
So yeah. Anyways. Yeah.
I always wished my mom like did more of that. You're like, no.
I'm like, there are pros to it, but then there was also like anytime you ever said, Mom, this teacher isn't a very good teacher, that teacher would hear from about it from my mom. You know. So yeah. Anyways, I'm very excited for your tag for the Asian Girl Tag podcast.
Of tag.
We love
all the tag girls.
The tag girls.
Nice.
Thank you so much for joining us on Tigress. You know, we're back every single week. And Jeannie will definitely be back because
yes, we have so much more to talk about.
We've already been sitting here for like a couple hours and I already have so many other ideas.
Yeah, I'm like, I feel like we haven't even scratched the surface.
Yes, in the future. So we'll be back soon and we'll link Jeannie all her socials in the description. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.